How on earth do you follow Mansell? I don't know. So, if you, like Jason was saying, because I said to him, if people are clapping, then they definitely need to be buying a ticket. So, hopefully, we'll be packed out on the 3rd of March. Please do use it as a time to invite your friends, family, work colleagues to what I promise you will be just from that little snippet there, is going to be a fantastic night. We're following it on in our morning series, Living at Peace with One Another. If you've got your Bible with you, I'm going to be reading from three different parts of Joseph's story this morning, starting in Genesis 39 at verse 1. And then you'll need to skip on a little bit to verse 19 and then going down into Genesis 40 verse 1. So reading from Genesis 39 verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. Then going down to verse 19. When his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. And then going down to chapter 40. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were being held in prison, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. And there we'll end the reading. And what I'll try and do this morning is covering some of the different aspects of what's going on there and extend the story a little bit more. So as I just said, we're continuing the series Live at Peace with One Another and looking at the life of Joseph. And today, we're looking at peace at work. Now, obviously, I'm in quite a good position because, or you could see it as a bad position because I work here at Fullwood Free Methodist. I work with a team of people. So, obviously, everything is absolutely rosy. I couldn't ask for a better job. But over the years, I've held different positions in different organisations and also talked to a lot of you and a lot of other people about their experience of life at work. And I don't just mean whether it's work in a workplace, but sometimes you know, the work that we have to do at home or in other situations as well. Or even maybe here working and volunteering as part of the church. And I wonder if you've ever noticed that when you meet someone for the first time, is often, you know, you'll say, "Hello, how are you?" "Oh, yes, I'm fine." "And your name is?" And then the next thing you'll probably ask them is, and what do you do?" And, you know, as a society, we place a lot of value and a lot of identity on what it is we actually do. So to give you an example, I met someone recently I've never met before. It wasn't in a church setting. It was out and about. And, you know, we got talking and I knew the question was coming up. "So what do you do?" And at that point, I'm this, you know, Because if you say to someone, oh, I'm a church pastor, I mean, I'm still trying to come to terms with me being a church pastor, let alone someone who has no experience of church understanding a church what? And so I was like, oh, well, you know, sometimes you try, you know, you try and make it sound really interesting. Oh, I work for a global organization. Really? Yeah. We've got departments all over the world. Wow. Yeah, it's incredible. It's a great job. I get to work with hundreds of people. I speak in front of hundreds of people each week. And, you know, they're suddenly thinking, whoo, this guy's actually got a bit about him. And they say, so what is it you actually do? I'm a church minister. You're a what? And they're, you know, you can see their faces suddenly drop. Because we do, when you know, if I went to them, oh, I'm a dustbin man. Or I'm a cleaner. Or I'm a banker. Which I used to be, by the way. And it wasn't, it's not, you know, not everyone in that works in banks is bad. Look at me, you know, the two Ians, come on. Yeah, I'm proud of those 8 years I spent with a certain bank. But anyway, so we often define people by what they actually do. And we start putting people in a box because we look at their job, what they actually do for a living. So does what we do define who we actually are? Or does our character and our value system actually determine what we do? And I think that for a lot of us can actually be a bit of an inner battle, that we actually struggle with, does the role that I'm doing actually conflict with the sort of person I actually am? Or do the two actually go hand in hand? And so what I want us to do this morning is look, is kind of recover some of the ground of Joseph and see where he started out and where he ends up. And so first and foremost, Joseph is someone who is being blessed by God. And his father sees him as his favorite son. It wasn't his actual identity, but the identity that his father was giving him was that he looked at Joseph, who was the firstborn of his favorite wife, and looks at him as if he's his favorite son, and actually gives him gifts of this amazing coat, and actually has Joseph report back to him on what his brothers are doing, because Joseph works for his brothers and reports back to his father any time that they do anything wrong. Now, we don't know whether he also reported when they did things good, but most of the time that we see in the passage, he's actually reporting back to his father and saying, this is what your sons are doing. And so we could also call him, that he, you know, in his lifestyle, he's a bit of a dreamer. Sorry about that. But he's, in a good way, God gives him dreams. And as we've looked at in the past, they're not just dreams for him. They are dreams about his entire family. That God is actually using Joseph to show to the family what will, at some point in the future, actually take place. That there is a plan and a purpose for them. But as a result, his brothers become jealous because of the favoritism, because it's clear that God's speaking to him, and they get to a point that they actually hate him. They even plot to kill him. And so then they strip him of his coat and they throw him in a well, planning to kill him. But then deciding, because of Reuben's intervention, his brother, to actually sell him off to the Ishmaelites. And so then he becomes a slave. And he's then bought in Egypt by Pharaoh's official, the captain of the guard, Potiphar. And he sees that the Lord is with Joseph, and that the Lord gives Joseph success. And so Potiphar makes Joseph his attendant, or, to put it another way, his housekeeper, trusting everything to his care. And as we see in chapter 39, verse 4, the blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and the field. So Potiphar sees the potential, probably for his own gain, but actually seeing that God blesses this young man. Despite everything that's already happened in his life, God's hand is upon Joseph. And he actually puts him in charge of his entire household, to the point that he clearly sees God's blessing on his house and everything, his crops and everything else. But then we get the situation that sadly, it doesn't last that long. And through no fault of Joseph, Potiphar's wife takes a bit of a fancy to him and decides, I'm going to have some of that. But Joseph turns her down, saying, not because it's a sin against his master, but because this will be sinning against God. I am not going to sleep with you because it will be sinning against my God. And so he doesn't do it. But she then makes up a story about Joseph to Potiphar, and he throws Joseph in prison. So now, having had quite a wealthy position, he's now a prisoner. But the Lord is still with him. Whatever situation we find ourselves in, God is still with us. And he grants him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So much so that he puts everyone else in the prison under the care of Joseph. So effectively, Joseph now becomes prison warden to all the other inmates. And there comes a point, and as we just read, that this includes Pharaoh's chief cupbearer and chief baker, because in some way they've offended the king, well, you know, whether they spilt the wine over him or baked him a bit of a doughy bread. I don't know what happened, but in some way they've seriously offended the king. Just notice at this point who it actually is that puts those two under the care of Joseph. It clearly says the captain of the guard, because they're in the prison of the captain, in the house of the captain of the guard. Who's the captain of the guard? Potiphar. So the man who has thrown Joseph in prison in the first place is now bringing back the value and recognizing what an amazing job Joseph is actually able to do by placing these two prisoners who have in the past have had such high status in front of the king. He is placing them back under Joseph's care. Now, to me, that looks like, and you can go away and read this for yourself if you want, but to me, it looks like Potiphar's trying to make amends. That he's actually trying to, in some way, restore Joseph. Because someone who is extremely mad at another man for sleeping with his wife, I don't believe would actually give that honor of looking after these prisoners to someone he was still extremely mad at. That in some way, there is a restoration starting to take place. Because he still values Joseph's character and his qualities. And so we see that these two officials each have a dream on the same night. And that these dreams make them sad because no one can interpret them. Now, looking at where Joseph's dreams have got him so far, he's been hated by his brothers, they've beaten him, they've stripped him, they've thrown him in a pit, he's been sold into slavery. You'd think that the mention of the word, we've had a dream, Joseph would go, right, see you later. Don't want to know. I've had those in the past. They're not worth it. But at this point, he says, interpreting dreams is God's business and no one else's. If you want an interpretation, you've got to go to God. No one else can give you the interpretation. And so he's still acknowledging that God is in control of his situation and circumstances, despite where he's finding himself at that moment in time. He's in prison. He can look back over his life and think, God, what on earth are you playing at? But he still acknowledges who God is and what he can do. And he doesn't let his situation or what he's doing define who he is or his relationship with God. Because he recognizes it's more than just what he's doing at this moment in time. It's about the relationship he has with his Lord God Almighty. And so he interprets both dreams and becomes an interpreter. And it's a great interpretation. And he stands there and he goes, well, within 3 days, you'll be restored. You'll be back to the place. You'll be holding the king's cup once again. Everything will be right as rain. So the baker thinks, hey, this guy's good. I want some of this. Can I have an interpretation of my dream? Now, at this point, if Joseph could have gone, let's be a crowd pleaser. We want to get out of this situation. We want to get out of prison. And could have said, well, you know, yours means something similar. Within 3 days, you'll be back out of prison. But actually, he is bleakly honest with the baker. And turns around to him and says, in 3 days, you're going to lose your head. Literally. The king's going to take your head off. And the birds are going to eat your flesh. Ooh, thanks. But if you look further in the story, there comes the point where the cupbearer, when Pharaoh's looking for an interpreter of his dream, if Joseph had said to both of them, it's all going to be okay, the cupbearer could have said to the king, well, there's a guy in prison who can interpret dreams. But out of two dreams we asked him to interpret, he only got one right. So he's only 50% effective. But because he was willing to be honest and absolutely open about the situation he was seeing before him, the cupbearer could then say, I know a guy who's 100% spot on with dream interpretation. If you want it interpreting, he's the man for the job. And so Joseph pleads with the cupbearer, when you get out, when all this comes about, please remember me. Remember me to the king so I can get out of this prison. And so the interpretations 3 days later come true, but Joseph is forgotten by the cupbearer. Despite Joseph's plea to mention him to Pharaoh, whether it's because, you know, just the thrill of being back holding that cup for the king or whatever, the cupbearer forgets to mention Joseph to Pharaoh. And so Joseph is forgotten for 2 whole years. He is completely looked over, still sitting in the prison, doing that same old job. Probably still being blessed by God, but not being where he could be. And it's only when Pharaoh finds no one can interpret his dreams does the cupbearer remember Joseph and how he was 100% right in his interpretations. So within a blink of an eye, Joseph quickly finds himself clean shaven, clean clothes, standing right before the king, who says to him, young man, I hear that you can interpret dreams. Now at this point, I don't know what you'd be like. If you'd been in prison for 2 years, you're now stood before the king or the queen, and you've got an opportunity to shine like never before in front of the king or queen, what would you say? I think if it was me, I'd go, interpret dreams, Your Majesty. Well, look no further. Thank you very much. Your cupbearer and your baker, they both came to me and I was spot on. There is no better man for this job than me. How often do we try and sell ourselves, or are told to sell ourselves if we go for an interview? To look our best, to say the right things, to smile at the right points. So what does Joseph say? I can't do it. Hang on a minute. He's been sitting in prison for over 2 years. He's had so much bad stuff happen to him in his life in the past. If there was ever a moment for Joseph to shine, this is it. I can't do it. But God can. God can be the one that will give you the answer that you desire. Standing before Pharaoh, who was worshipped as a god by his people, with the power to do to Joseph whatever he wished. Click of his fingers, anything could happen to Joseph. Joseph is telling the king that his God will give the answer. Joseph interprets the dreams, the good and the bad that Pharaoh has had, the rough with the smooth. He sees the two dreams, one that is talking about prosperity, one that is talking about hardship. And even before the king of Egypt, he doesn't pull any punches. He just says, this is how it's going to be, and it's going to be tough. He's still completely honest with his outlook. And then he becomes an advisor to Pharaoh, and he advises Pharaoh on what he should do. Your Majesty, you should look for someone who's discerning and wise and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Commission someone to do the work in Pharaoh's name. And next week, Pastor Andrew will cover a lot more of this as we look at next week, at peace in recession. But at this point, Pharaoh and his officials think this is an absolutely great plan. Start storing up. Ready for the hard times that are ahead. And at this point, Pharaoh asks his officials, kind of like, I suppose, a little board meeting, and says, is there anyone like this man? The Spirit of God is on him. He's intelligent, he's wise, and he's discerning. And he puts Joseph in charge of the whole of Egypt. He puts his ring on his finger and dresses him in fine linen and gold. Joseph becomes the second in command, Pharaoh's right-hand man, to the point that Pharaoh says, no one in all of this nation will lift a finger or a foot unless you say so. Just in conclusion, I think there's some simple things that we can learn from Joseph's story about finding peace at work. And the first one, I think, is this, is honour. Despite all the things that had happened to him, Joseph continued to honour God. In whatever he did, in whatever he said, first and foremost, he was always honouring to God. Are we the same? Do we go about our work and our business in such a way that at all times it's honouring to God? even in those situations we're not in control of, do we still acknowledge and accept that God is in control? That even if we may find ourselves in a situation like Joseph did, we still honor and acknowledge that he is still with us. Because who we are should be being molded by Christ, not us being molded by the role or the situation or the job we find ourselves in. The second thing I want us to think about this morning is honesty. And Joseph, as we see from the way he interpreted those dreams, was willing to be honest, even if it was going to possibly make him unpopular. Is the things that we say to other, our work colleagues or other people around us, things that we think we want them to, we think that those are the things that they want to hear, or are they the things that we know they need to hear? Joseph was willing to at all times be completely honest. He wasn't seeking to be a crowd pleaser, but was seeking to bring about God's purposes in his situation. And then the third thing I want us to think about as well is that our humility, which, you know, even in our current climate, is a hard thing because there's so few jobs out there and so many people seeking for them. But Joseph had opportunities to make himself look good and say how great he was, or that he was the right man for the job at that time. But instead, he was willing to stand there and say, I cannot do it, but God can. But at the same time, he was still looking out for other people. He was willing to serve other people. And even, you know, you look at the example that of when the cupbearer and the baker are looking sad, he goes to them and said, why are your faces sad today? He shows concern for the people around him. And these were the traits of Joseph's character that I believe made him stand out. God had shown him a plan and a purpose. And even though at times it may look like the plan was going that way and he was going that way, he was still open and honest and honoring to God and humble in every situation, knowing that God was still there even if he was heading south and God's plan for him seemed to be heading north. Wherever he was, whether it was in the depths of prison or stood in his master's house, or stood in the palace with the king's ring on his finger, he still always put God first and foremost. So wherever we find ourselves, let those same values be evident to everyone around us, so that they may say, can we find anyone else like this? Because we demonstrate God's wisdom, that we demonstrate God's character, that as it says in James 3:17, that we might have the wisdom that is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. You may be sitting there this morning, a bit like Joseph. You've been wronged, maybe even forgotten and overlooked. Or maybe you're waiting for an opportunity to prove yourself. Or maybe you might find yourself in a job or a situation that seems so worthless. But each and every one of us can still bring about peace by being God's person in that situation, acknowledging him and honoring him in all our ways, believing that no matter what, he will make our path straight, even if it means that we're not going from A to B, but maybe A to Z. Thanks, Jason.